Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 331.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 330. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening, as always. I truly appreciate everyone's support. So, I have an awesome episode for you today. This is really fun to film, and I've been, you know, I always try to be as efficient as possible, but it's difficult. As a content creator, it is very difficult, and it takes practice, and it's one of my goals, actually, for the podcast. Obviously, if you're listening to this, just so you know, if you're a newcomer, I tend to be a little long-winded on the podcast because it is a podcast, right? If you're in your car and things like that, you're listening. So I tend to speak a little bit more about JPS, about what's happening, about my goals, my vision, talking about jazz piano, so on and so forth, what I'm doing in the membership, what I'm doing outside the membership, learning lessons, all that good stuff. If you just want the pure edited content, right? You can go to youtube.com/jazzpianoschool, subscribe, and watch the podcast lessons. They're very to the point, right? Very brief intro and then right into the lesson. But here we are in the podcast, so I'm kind of speaking about my goals. And like I said, my goal is to be more efficient with these podcasts. And I actually met with a YouTube specialist the other day, which was kind of fun because I really do want to, I always love learning. Like you can always keep learning, right? And that's what's so great about music and jazz piano. And I respect it. All my students, like all the students in my live programs, all the members in the membership, everyone, you know, no matter what age you're at, there's always, you can always learn and you can always improve and it's never too late. So, you know, I've been running this business for over a decade and I'm still learning things. Like, you know, I'm trying to learn more about YouTube, how to get more views, how to reach people, because I believe in my content, I believe in my education, and I believe in my teaching philosophies and the way I present material. So, you know, it's hard because, you know, just to share a little bit, you could have the best content on YouTube, right? You could be the best teacher, but let's say you don't have good production, you don't have good camera quality, good audio quality. Let's say your thumbnails aren't good. Let's say the titles aren't great, like the SEO, the keywords, you're not going to get seen, you know? So it's really kind of a game, which is unfortunate. You know, it's too bad that you couldn't just like, I don't know how they would do this, but just like rank the best videos, you know, I guess that's what YouTube is trying to do in some sort of way, but it's difficult. Like a lot of the views on some great videos I put out, you know, it's only a couple thousand views compared to some other streamers and things like that, hundreds of thousands of views. Like, that's crazy. I think the most viewed video I have of views is 50,000. Now, this obviously sparks and inspires me to grow. And so I met with this YouTube specialist and he had a lot of great tips. And so again, on my videos on YouTube, I'm going to try to be a little bit more concise with the information, delivering a lot of stuff quickly, fast, and some other good things as well. Anyway, I had a member reach out to me before we get into this podcast too, talking about my philosophies and like the way that Jazz Piano School is structured. And I just want to let you know, for all the members out there listening, if you're not a member too, you can go to jazzpianoschool.com, click on membership, or just view the courses. I am constantly working to upgrade the website and it's hard. I mean, doing web work is very difficult, but I've just actually stumbled upon some amazing things we can start to do. That was going to really transform the website into just upgrade it even further. Last year, around Black Friday, we recently launched a new community inside of Jazz Piano School, which is so awesome. Before, you had to go to the Facebook group, and if I had a lot of members saying, oh, I don't like Facebook. I don't use Facebook. They couldn't be a part of the community. Now, when you're a member, you actually just log in and the community is inside the, you know, portal, the web app. As a person that's probably used to technology, the average person probably would hear that and be like, yeah, isn't that normal? Well, to be honest with you, to do that kind of thing in this day and age as a business owner either costs thousands of tens of thousands of dollars to get a custom built solution, which that is not what I have. I have different pieces of software and solutions put together. Or it just takes a long time to figure out the components, what's going to work, what's not, you know? So it might sound easy on the outside, but trust me, for all the tech or the web developers out there, they know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, it's very, very, very hard. So I am very happy even today releasing this because of these new discoveries in the building of the website and JPS. And yeah, I'm just happy. There's going to be a lot of new features rolled out, things like that. So I'm working very hard. And then back to my point, the member talked about my philosophies as far as my three-goal philosophy goes, and I've been really trying to deliver this, and I want to deliver even more, do some free workshops, things like that, maybe some paid workshops that are a little bit more in-depth. But I'm going to restructure the inside of Jazz Piano School to really be around this because I'm super goal-oriented, and I believe it's one of the main issues in Jazz Piano is when you do not have a purpose or a why for a component that you're learning, you don't know where to go, right? You have no direction. So I use this analogy before. You could have the fastest car with the best driver, but if they don't have a destination or a place to go, then they're going to be driving around aimlessly. You could have the best plane, the best pilot. If they don't know where to go, if they don't have a destination, then it's pretty much pointless, right? You're just lost. You have the best pilot, the best plane, but they're lost, right? Because they don't know where to go. So the same thing happens in Jazz Piano constantly. Students are going onto the internet, especially the internet these days, right? They're just learning and learning and learning. Oh, let me learn this. Let me learn this. And it's all based on the student's own interest. Like, it's your own interest. I get that. That's cool. It's like you want to learn what you want to learn. That's fine. But you have to realize at a certain point, you can't just keep learning random information. That's like a plane just flying around aimlessly without a goal. It's like a car driving around aimlessly without a destination, right? Eventually, that's going to lead to nothing, nowhere, right? It leads to nowhere. And you have a bunch of random information that you've gathered, but you don't really know why. You don't really know how to put pieces together. So this whole new philosophy that I've built, and it really am emphasizing to all my students and my listeners and you right now, is really centered around these three goals: accompaniment, solo piano, and improv, in that order. Because, and even if this is your first time listening or if it's not, every tool, every component that you learn, I want you to ask yourself, how does this benefit my goal? And I also want you to ask yourself, do I need this for my goal? Do I need this to reach my goal? Now, I'm not saying you can't have all three goals, right? If you want to play in a band or play in a jazz group or comp or accompany a vocalist or singer in a duet or an instrumentalist, right? I'm not saying you can't improv. And if your goal is solo piano, I'm not saying you can't comp. But I'm saying you want to filter out your goals and your ambitions and the knowledge that you're learning into those three categories. It's not just, here, let me show you how to play this tune. Like, here's a transcription of Fly Me to the Moon. Check out all these cool things I can do on this tune. Oh, let's go to There's No Greater Love, or let me look at these fills I can do up here, and here's how I would voice this if you're playing it solo piano, right? What is the purpose of everything that you're learning? The more you can ask yourself this, the faster you're going to make results. You're literally going to 10x your results in that amount of time, right? You're going to have more results, and it's going to be in a faster amount of time. Now, what student wouldn't want that, right? Doesn't that sound amazing? And if you use this system, and I've seen it happen, the reason this actually all started and the reason that I have proven results from this is all due to the live programs that I started a couple years ago. I had these philosophies in mind when starting the program. I delivered them and saw the amazing tangible results. Now, these students in my live programs, they submit me recordings of video recordings of themselves playing every single week. They submit video recordings of themselves playing every single week, right? So the data and the results that I am describing are literally based off of weeks and weeks of recordings that I've watched that are on the internet. Now, they're private because obviously those are my students in the live program. And I did share one podcast with one of the students. You can go back and listen to that, Mike. Amazing. I might share some more in the future just so you can hear the difference, because there's been even more results from that. But the reason that I'm so stoked on this new philosophy is because of what I've seen and what I've seen proven by these students that have made massive amounts of progress. It's unbelievable in just 3 months' time. So anyway, I'm restructuring a lot inside Jazz Piano School. I'm really going after that. And then everything on the side, you know, I really truly believe at this point, every single piece of information you learn should be focused on one of those three goals, right? So if you are learning solo piano, it's like, what's your purpose of solo piano? Like, what do you want to learn in solo piano? Improv and solo piano, that is two components put together. You're improvising and you're playing it in a solo piano style. That, by the way, is one of the hardest things to do. If you want to learn improv, the easier step is to play in a group, because you don't need to do everything yourself, right? Solo piano, the first step to play ballads or cocktail style, as a lot of students like to say, the first step is ballads. It's actually quite easy to learn how to do that. Now, I know as a student, we're all looking to like play fancy fills, rich harmonizations and things like that, but you can create amazing sounding ballad or cocktail style solo piano very easily with a couple small components. And I guarantee you a lot, if that is your goal, a lot of the things you're probably learning, are like 2% of the big picture. So like to create a great sound fast, that you don't need that stuff. And B, it's probably just excessive, like in a way, like, you know, that stuff is very miscellaneous information or stuff to play on the piano. And by focusing on that, you're not really developing any sort of true foundation, anything to grow on or layer on more advanced concepts, right? So it's really like you have this kind of house that's built on top of a really shaky foundation. It just can't go up. Like, you can't just keep stacking, building on top of a shaky foundation. And so that's where a lot of students are. But anyway, I just wanted to share that because I'm really excited about that. I'm going to be doing more outreach to students through the podcast, through some workshops and things like that, once I get some things squared away, so that you can really kind of take a look at the website, take a look at all this new information if you are interested. And if you are a member already, you're just going to get access to that. So you can just sign up now, get access to all the new upgrades that are coming. And again, if you are interested in joining my live programs, my mastermind program will be open very soon, which is a 9-month program that you get to study with me personally. And my accelerator program actually is now open, which will be starting in April, which is really cool too. So if you're interested in learning more about the accelerator program, just go to jazzpianoschool.com and click on live programs and you can get more information about that. But that is open. It opens once every 3 months. So that is open for enrollment now. Inside the accelerator program, you still get to work with me. I teach the classes, but I don't do the lesson plans. My amazing collegiate instructors do the lesson plans. They're awesome. Sterling Koza and Trent Bryden. And I do to teach the classes. So you do get to interact with me, ask me questions. You get teaching from me. And then Sterling and Trent do your lesson plans, and they do some classes as well. So anyway, with that being said, I have a really fun episode on just how to resolve 2-5-1s in a ballad or a cocktail style way, so that when you resolve or end a tune, I'm going to give you 9 different endings for a tune that just ends, right? Whoops, something just fell off my piano. But in this episode, you're going to get 9 different endings you can use to end a ballad. And they're kind of like reharms. So reharms that you can use. Really, really fun stuff. I know you're going to enjoy it. So With that being said, let's dive right in.
All right, I love these types of episodes because I get to just deliver the education to you straightforward. So the first one, playing through our 2-5-1, we get to the 5 chord. Okay, so it's going to be very easy. I'm just going to hit a major 7 with a sharp 11. So essentially whatever one major 7 you're ending on, you can add a sharp 11. I like to add a 13 as well and a 9. And this will give you a beautiful voicing. I'm going to show you what I like to use here. So over a C major 7, I have 1, 5, 3, 7. And then all I'm doing here is playing an upper structure triad. I'm going to play a D major triad on top. So a 2 major triad on top of the C. And this gives me this beautiful, gorgeous C major 7, 9, sharp 11, 13 sound. Okay. So that's going to be number 1. If you can't reach this 10th, that's okay. You can hit your 5th. And then jump up to your thumb here. So I'm going to hit my 5th, jump up to my thumb on E, and hit that chord that I just showed you. Another variation of this that I like to do is a 6 chord. And just double the 6 or the 13 on top. So instead of a 7 here, right, I have a 6. So this makes this a C6 chord. You see that in the notation there? And then I'm adding into that D upper structure triad to get the extensions, the 9, the sharp 11. And again, in this case, the 13 is really just a doubled 6. So with this particular chord, you can always arpeggiate anything you land on. So I'm just going to take the same exact voicing that I'm using right here, and I'm just going to take my right hand and arpeggiate it up the piano. Right, very nice. And I'm holding the pedal down to get a nice ringing sound effect. So that's number 1, the major 7 sharp 11 chord. You can really voice it however you want. You can kind of play some voicings up the piano. All I'm doing here is the shells in that D major triad. I'm really just thinking about an upper structure triad over top of the C major. In this case, a 2 major triad, which gives you 9 sharp 11 13. Number 2 is going to be the flat 2 major 7 delayed resolution. So again, here's our D minor 7. Going to our G7, maybe altered. And then I'm going to go to a flat 2 major 7. So in this case, a D flat major 7. So here's my D flat major 7. I'm using 1-5 here and rootless voicing in my right hand. And again, adding some sort of flourish onto these kind of like reharmed chords is always nice. So I might arpeggiate this voicing again, just a rootless voicing arpeggiation. And then I'm going to resolve it to the C major. The voicing I'm using here, it can be anything. You can just use a regular C major rootless voicing for a C major 7, the one I used. It's a nice, big, thick spread voicing. Again, my left hand, I really love the 5th and the 10th here. It gives a nice, rich, low subsonance. In my right hand, I have 5, 3, 9, 7, 5. A nice, big, thick, lush chord. And again, even on this, you can add some extension. So I could go for my D flat major triad down into my C major 7 sharp 11, 9 and 13, which was number 1 of this, to N. It's all based on what type of chord quality and sound you want to get out of that 1 major 7. Okay, so that's going to be number 2 is the flat 2 delayed resolution reharm, and then resolving into your 1 major 7. Number 3 is going to be the flat 7 dominant reharm delayed resolution. So this is one of my favorites. Here we are on our D minor 7, G sus, G7 flat 9, flat 13, and then I'm going to go to a B flat 7. So a flat 7 dominant triad. I like to add the 13 on here. So let's check this voicing out. I'm just using a regular B flat 7 rootless voicing, and I'm adding the sharp 11. There's my sharp 11. Okay, right, so there's my flat 7. You can just think about this as a whole step down from the major 7 you're resolving to. You can roll this chord here, and then, again, just resolve to your 1 major 7 however you want. I like to do this little roll here into the 3rd sometimes, or into the 7th, and then place your voicing. I feather my left hand. See that? And the voicing kind of falls layer by layer into place. So number three, the flat 7 dominant sharp 11 chord. Beautiful, beautiful chord. Number four is going to be the flat 7 major walk-up. So instead of a dominant 7 now, we have a major 7 walk-up. And I'll show you what that is. Here's our D minor 7. Okay, back to my G7 alt. I'm going to go to a B flat major 7 now. Then I'm going to walk up to a B major 7. And then I'm going to walk up to my C major 7. Now, with every one of these chords, again, you can flourish these anytime with an arpeggio. If you want to, you know, do some any sort of broken arpeggio. So many students ask me, what arpeggio should I play? What arpeggio should I play? As long as you're playing within the key or the chord of what you're on, you can arpeggiate literally anything you want. I never really have like a set arpeggiation. I might just take my rootless voicing and arpeggiate that. I might arpeggiate just the 3-5-7-9. Sometimes I just play the chords too. I'll just play the chords up. Arpeggiate my upper structure triad, right? So you can also make these 6 chords as well. They don't have to be major 7s, right? Here's my major 7 on the B flat major 7 chord. I'm just using a rootless voicing. If I change my 7 to a 6 here, I can make these 6 chords. And that'll change the chord quality as well. The 6 is more of an old school style. Think Ellington, Basie, you know, more 30s, 40s, 50s. The major 7 really comes... starts to come into play like at around the bebop era, and that major 7 chord starts to be used a little bit more. But if you want more of a traditional bebop sound, you'd use your 6 chord. You can even take the 9 out. So here's my 9. I can just play a regular root here. Again, the less kind of fancy extensions you have, just a more traditional 6 chord is going to give you an older sounding style as opposed to kind of like a lot of colors with getting into like Bill Evans-ish sound, stuff like that. So that's going to be number 4, the major 7 or major 6 walk-up. Number 5, this is a great one. I love this one. This is going to be the 4 minor. So again, this is a delayed resolution where we put in a chord before we get to the 1 chord. Here's my D minor 7 that I continue to voice, I think. A lot of times I've been voicing it like this. 1, 10, 5, 7, 9, 11. I love this voicing for a minor 7 chord. G sus. Love going to my sus chord first, and then maybe E flat 9, sharp 11, 13. Love this voicing too. Again, any voicing that you pick, you can arpeggiate, roll up the octave. I'm going to go to my 4 minor, just a 4 minor triad. So in the key of C, we're going to have an F minor triad. This is a little bit more poppy. I'll show you how we can add some variations to this in a second. And then I resolve. So my 4 minor. Or I can just hit it, let it ring out, and then sometimes I'll resolve to a 1 major triad too, which is gorgeous. Like, it sounds pure, elegant, you know, pristine. When we have these triads, don't forget about your triads, everyone. These are beautiful harmonies in classical music, right? Right? Gorgeous endings. Just pure triads without your sevenths. Without your sevenths, right? Here's how we can make it a little bit different, though. Add some variations. Again, my minor 7. My G, my 5-7 sus, going to my G7, oh, I played this before. Okay, now I can go to my 4 minor 6 if I want. This is a gorgeous sound as well. So I'm playing an F minor 6 chord. I know the notation says D minor 7 flat 5 over F, but this is essentially an F minor 6 chord. Beautiful sound with that 6 in there. And then again, oops, I got a note sticking up there. You can end on the triad, major 7, sharp 11, all 3 of those options, right? You can also combine options like F minor triad, D flat major triad, and then into that. I'm going to keep it rather simple because simple tends to be a little bit more better option. If you get into too many reharms, it can start to sound like a little out, like, oh, what's this guy doing? Is this there, you know, this is kind of getting a little crazy, right? So you still want it to have like some substance and like melodic substance, and too much can obviously be too much at sometimes. All right, so the four minor, you can also make this a four minor major. This is a gorgeous sound as well. So four minor major, an F minor major seven chord on that. So again here, D minor seven, G sus. Four minor major seven. I'm just arpeggiating a rootless minor major seven chord. Super easy, super easy. Anyone can do this. You just need to know your rootless voicings, as I always say, right? And then I resolve to my C major seven. All right, moving on to number six. This is a fun one. This is going to be a one diminished delayed resolution. Two, five sus, five sharp 11, 13, flat 9, same voice I used last time. One diminished. Okay, so I'm playing a C diminished, a one diminished. And then resolving into my one major seven. C diminished. I love this voicing for my diminished. We get, you can either have the C, the root on top if you want to double that, or I can add the major seven here and then the nine into my C diminished. This is a beautiful voicing here. And then resolving. But again, at its most simplistic voiced method, you can just do this. This will sound gorgeous as well. Root position, C major, C diminished, excuse me. Moving into a regular C major rootless voice. Gorgeous ways to end. So here it is again. Okay. Number seven. This is one of my favorites, all-time favorites. I use this a lot. It's so pretty. It kind of surprises people, especially the musicians I play with. They're like, ooh, that was pretty. Like, where did that come from? It doesn't sound like jazz. It's more of a classical treatment, a lot of gospel church treatment in this too that gets used. So two minor seven, five seven, let's go alt again, two minor seven flat five over the one. So I'm essentially, in this case, I'm gonna play a D minor seven flat five over the one. So pretty. This essentially is the same thing as your, like I said before, your four minor six chord. It's just over top of the one now, and then placing it over the one is a completely different sound than having that four in the bass. So, different bass notes, same harmonies, but it makes a world of difference because you're essentially pedaling the harmonies over top of the one. And again, the way I think about this, harmonically speaking, is a two minor seven flat five seventh chord, which resolves into gorgeous, right? And this our little arpeggio here. I'm just taking these four notes, C, D, E, G. This is a gorgeous thing you probably hear in a lot of pop, mainly pop. You don't really hear this in jazz much or other styles of music. I mean, that's a classic run up. Three, five, one, two, three, five, one, two, three, five, one, two, three. So again, here it is again. Two, five, two minor seven flat five. I'm arpeggiating that, and then I'm resolving. Whoops, there we go. That's one of my favorites right there. That was number seven, number eight. This is a fun one. Two minor seven, five seven, sus. Maybe let's go to a regular flat nine here. This is called the Lady Bird ending I like to use. So flat three major seven, flat six major seven, flat two major seven, and then finally one. Now it's called the Lady Bird ending because it's the same ending that Lady Bird, the song Lady Bird has, it's a Tad Dameron song, that uses the ending there, right? So one, flat three, flat six, flat two. So you can use this ending whenever you want. Right, two, five, I'm gonna go to flat three, rootless voicings in my right hand, rootless voicing, rootless voicing, rootless voicing. Gorgeous ending. And last but not least, one of my most favorite endings of them all, when playing in a group, I usually hold up some numbers, like to the bass player, I'll go sharp four. That essentially means what I'm about to play here, sharp four, or if I just mouth it to them. But if I'm playing solo piano or accompanying someone, I get to choose whatever I want, so it's all good. But if I do have a bass player with me, I'll go sharp four. So, 2 minor 7, 5, G7 altered scale. There we go. Now, sharp four. We have an F sharp minor 7 flat 5. F minor. This is all going to be in half steps walking down, but you have to pay attention to the chord quality. So we start with a minor 7 flat 5. 1, 7, 3, flat 5, 7. Again, minor third here, right? So this is an F sharp or G flat minor 7 flat 5, however you want to think about it. F minor 7. We're just walking down my half steps. E minor 7. Now I'm going to show you a lot of chord quality variations, but right now all you have to think is minors for the most part. 2 minor, okay? Now from here you have some options. You can go to the tritone major, like I showed you, that was number 2 of the resolution, right? Your flat 2 major 7, and then down to 1. That's one variation. They're all going to start with a minor 7 flat 5. You always want to start with that minor 7 flat 5. Into your minor 7. Into your minor 7. Now here, sometimes I like to use dominance. So half step down into a dominant. Really love this sound. Into my minor. Into my dominant again. Now for my dominant chord qualities here, I'm adding a natural 9 and sharp 11. 1, 5, 3, 7. We have everything we need. We have the bass note and shells. Now I'm going to add my colors. 9. Sharp 11 on top, and then into my 1 major. Okay, so you can really pick and choose and combine any of those variations. Sharp 4, minor 7, flat 5, minor 7, E minor 7, right? I could go minor again here. Minor 11 there. Minor 11 here. I could go dominant now, or major with a sharp 11. And then into my 1 major 7. All right, let me go through them again really fast one more time. Number 1 was the sharp 11. Sharp 11. Number 2, the flat 2 major. Flat 2 major, 7. Resolution. Number 3, the flat 7 dominant. 2, 5, flat 7 dominant plus the sharp 11. The flat major 6 or flat major 7 walk up. 2, 5, flat 7 major. Walk up by half steps into your resolution. Number 5, the 4 minor. 2, 5, 4 minor triad. 4 minor 6. 4 minor major 7. And then resolution. Those were all the three options of the different types of 4 minor you can use. Number 6, the 1 diminished. 2, 5, trying to pick different 5 chord voicings. 1 diminished. Just going up in inversions there. And then resolution. Number 7, the 2 minor 7 flat 5 over the 1. One of my favorites. 2, 5, D minor 7 flat 5, 2 minor 7 flat 5 over the 1. Such a beautiful chord. This natural 9 you can throw in there, I did at the end. This sound to me, oh my God, this gives me goosebumps. I don't know why. This particular sound is like so gorgeous. Like, so this scale, essentially it's a Locrian scale with a natural 9. So here's your regular Locrian scale with this flat 2, essentially, but the natural 2, oh, it's just the most gorgeous sound, because this essentially is the third, right, of the C major 7 that you're playing. So you have this. I usually like to use 1-5-1 here, just an octave. Don't put the third in your left hand, though. Just make it 1-5-1 or 1. Go slowly. Milk it. And then resolve. Thirds are beautiful as well here. Again, I'm just taking that scale and harmonizing it in thirds. I'm holding the pedal down. I'm not even pedaling. I'm letting everything ring together. Oh, so gorgeous. And then again, 1 major 7, or just, I love a pure triad here. Voice like this. This is so gorgeous. Or sometimes I'll slip in a little bit of a 9. See this? So like, it's just a little texture, but it makes all the difference. Just like a little bit of a flare there. You can make it longer, shorter, depending upon how much of an accent you want. Right, if you want, if I want them to hear it a lot, I'll go slower. If I want it just a flick, you know, if I want 1/4 of a teaspoon of this color, if I want half a teaspoon, if I want a full teaspoon, right? So it's really depending upon how much flavor of these different things you want. If you want a tablespoon of the 2 minor 7 flat 5 over top of the 1, milk it out. That might be half a cup, right? Oh, it's so gorgeous. It's just the most, anyway. All right, 8, the Lady Bird. You can tell that's one of my most favorite endings there. The Lady Bird ending, 2, 5, flat 3 major 7, flat 6 major 7. This is a standard. I'm just like, yeah, this is cool. Flat 2 major 7. Okay. Oh, I gotta fix that note. It's bothering me. And last but not least, 9, the sharp 4 walk down. We have our 2, 5, sharp 4 minor 7 flat 5. F minor 7. E minor 7. Now this flat 3, actually, by the way, I left one out, can be a diminished. Oops, that was a minor 7 flat 5. Sorry, there we go, full diminished, right? So you can go 3, full diminished, or again, like I said, 3 minor 7, dominant, which I love using. 2, flat major 2, or dominant into your 1. And there's some more variations in there, like dominant. This can go to the 6 flat 6 major, kind of combining the Lady Bird. Then you can drop down to the 5 here if you want again, or flat 2, 1. And again, you can kind of tack on flat 2, flat 7, or flat 2 major 7 walk up, right? To kind of combine some of these. But again, don't do that at first. Isolate each one, practice each one. I did these in the key of C. Clearly, you're going to need to practice these progressions and know them by the numbers. The Roman numerals will help you transpose in different keys. Like when you're playing a song that ends in the key of G, all you got to think, flat 7, right? Dominant sharp 11 chord. So that's going to be your F7, dominant sharp 11 into your 1. It's your G major 7. So the more you can kind of analyze it and learn it with the Roman numerals, the better off you're going to be with all these endings. Hope that was helpful, everyone. Honestly, those are some of my most favorite endings. Clearly, I'm pretty passionate about these endings. I love it. If you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, I'll talk to you later.